sit down and chop it up. Let's talk about it.
Well, let's ask the right question.
Who's convinced?
We're starting to see the mind-mind stuff now.
It's What Do You Know With Joe? What's going on, everybody? We have another week of What Do You Know With Joe. As always, we've got Baxter. We've got Winnie. Lindsay's still on summer vacation. Life is good. We're thinking about getting a betta fish, and I said it had to be a podcast fish, so would love to take some requests for names. This week, we have the great, the goat, as some people call him, Scott Webb. Scott is a great friend of mine, of my family's. He's very close. I consider him an uncle. He's been to every Christmas that I can remember. He's known as the dancer at all weddings, at Kafira weddings. Always known to, have to pack an extra shirt because the man's just tearing up the dance floor. But he, not only that, Scott's one of the smartest people I've ever met. He's very, very, business savvy, as well as very great with technology. So I can't wait for everyone to learn that. He also dives into a little bit of the process as becoming an American citizen. As many of you will know or will hear, Scott is originally from Australia, and he went through the process of becoming an American citizen. So we talk a little bit about that, but want everyone to tune in and learn more about Scott. Here we go.
Hello and welcome to another episode of What Do You Know With Joe. I have a great guest and great friend of mine, Scott Webb. Scott, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, you're welcome, Joe. How's it going?
It's going great. As we talked a little bit in the pre-pod talk, it was fun. It's been fun. It's been good. Hope everything's going well with you.
Yeah, no, can't complain.
See, that's good. That's always good. It's been really good. I'm very excited. A lot of listeners are going to be excited because I had a lot of people that also said I should have you on before we had talked. Like we had talked to me and like I easily want to have Scott on. And as I was talking and people were like, oh, you should have on so-and-so. A lot of people were like, you should have on Scott. And I was like, way ahead of you. That's a lot. So a lot of people are going to be very excited to hear this episode when it airs.
You're a man ahead of your times, John.
That's what it is. I feel like that's the only way you can really, get ahead. You have to be ahead. Otherwise, you're going to be like, oh, why didn't I think of that? This is also, I'm trying something new with this microphone. I usually have it in this little stand thing. And so we'll see how this goes. As many of you probably can hear, Scott is from Australia. Scott, where specifically were you from and born in Australia?
Born in a small town. If you picture the size of America, Australia, and overlay it on top, Australia is about the same size as America. So when you see the picture of Australia, I'm actually from the northeast of the country in a state called Queensland. Mm-hmm. And if you imagine it, there's a peninsula on the northeast coast. I'm in the northeast region. It's in the tropics. So obviously it gets quite warm in the summer. And it's a small town of about 5,000 people when I grew up. It's just outside of a town called Mackay, and which is the bigger town nearby. But yeah, so I'm from Serena, Queensland, born and raised there. So
what was it like growing up like in Australia? Like I'm sure as you've seen, especially now in the States. By the way, I think people needed to hear that and hear that Australia is the same size as the United States. I think people like to think USA is like a huge country, and hey, put in perspective, Australia is the same size. What was it like, especially like you've seen, living in the States for so many years? What was it like growing up in Australia? Is it similar to like that of the States, or a lot of things different, little different variables here and there?
Different variables here and there. It's more a case, I think, of the time of growing up. Like, if you talk to your family or to your aunts and uncles about how they grew up, growing up in Australia was similar to that. Obviously, because I grew up in the 60s, I was born in the 60s. We didn't have, we didn't really have the Vietnam War, to where you guys had that, and the hippies and that sort of a generation.
Woodstock.
Even though we kind of had, I was way too young to even know about that stuff. But it's also growing up in a small town of 2,000 people. It's very rural. It was an agricultural town. The town was founded basically on the sugarcane industry. So It was very different. But, you know, in seeing how friends of mine in the US of the same age group grew up, it was similar in that aspect of it. We had, you know, obviously Australia's population when I was growing up was, you know, probably like about 16, 17 million people for the whole country. Okay. So it's, you know, we had growing up, we had two TV stations. When I was born, we had an outhouse. we had a wood stove. So, yeah, so it was similar to the US growing up, I guess, in that timeline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And a couple things with that. It makes me think, like, you know, there's one first question. It makes me think, like, you know, that sounds a lot like there could be would you equate that with is there a place in America that you would equate that with, like, similarly? It's, I mean, because, like, when you describe it, you know, I feel like there could be somewhere similar. But and then two, you mentioned briefly, like you said, like television and cartoon. What was that like? Like, did you have like Saturday morning cartoons, or was there like a Cartoon Network or Disney Channel of Australia, or were like American like cartoons coming in? What was that like?
No, so we had equation wise, it's probably if you were to go to the Midwest, to, you know, the wheat farms or to or corn. Where the farmers are. So it's kind of like, I guess that's sort of a community, because it was a lot of, if you didn't work for the local sugar mill, which, you know, took the cane from the farmers and turned it into raw sugar or to other raw materials. So you worked in the town, you know, like mum worked as a bank teller. When she when she was growing up, dad left school when he was 13 because he didn't like the school system. Mm-hmm. And he didn't feel, you know, he didn't think he was smart, that sort of stuff. So he wanted to work. So he started working when he was 13, working in, you know, the local kind of like store where they it was all sorts of back in those days, you know, where it was the retail store for food, but it was also for the local farm products, stuff like that. So dad worked there. So if it would be more like rural America is where I kind of, I guess, grew up in that aspect of it.
Okay.
And it was, TV, we only had two TV stations. We had, you know, the government station, which was the Australian Broadcasting Commission. So that was one channel. And the other channel we had, which was local, private enterprise channel. And TV started, you know, early in the morning, like about 6 o'clock. And at 10, 11 o'clock at night, it was the national anthem. And then it was the, you know, the universal round colored circle, that every other, you know, network, you know, used to have when they were shutting down the station. But in the morning, we did have Sesame Street. We did think it was quite humorous that, you know, you pronounce the last note of the alphabet as a Z, because, you know, we always said it was a Z. So that it was the American, the accent was quite humorous. But we did also have other, you know, cartoons. We had, you know, Bugs Bunny and the Warner Brothers and, you know, Porky Pig. So we had those sort of cartoons. And then we also had our own Australian TV children's shows. You know, much like now there's the Wiggles, where we had other shows like Play School and other TV shows that we watched. But so, yeah, we had a kind of like a bit of American TV, a bit of Australian TV, but we also had British TV. So we kind of had a cacophony of different shows as kids growing up.
Yeah. Okay. That's pretty cool. I meant the image of Australian Wiggles just kind of walked through my head a little bit, which is pretty cool to think about.
It wasn't quite the Wiggles we were growing up, but...
you described that aspect, and that sounds pretty cool. Can you tell me, and you briefly touched about it with your dad, tell me a little about when you went through school. Is that similar to the States? And, like, you know, did you go through like a K-12 elementary, middle, high school, and then, you know, was that like your school experience in Australia? And then with that, you know, do do people, this is kind of a bigger question, maybe we'll save it, but you know, what do you know, did you know you wanted to go to college after high school? You know, I know in the States it's a big thing, everyone's like college, but you know, I know, you know, especially now it's, I think it's getting a little bit better. There's other options, especially there's other things people can do. There's trade schools, there's technical, there's a lot of different things people can do. You know, do other people, is that more of like the norm in Australia, or is it like America where everyone's like, hey, let's go to college. We've got to figure this out.
No, so in that aspect, it's somewhat very different. And so when I went through, we called it kindergarten. We had kindergarten, and we had our school system when I was growing up was 1 through 7 at primary school. And then you went to high school, which was 8 through 12. So kindergarten was just kind of, it was not really a structured school system. It was more of a, you went there and you drew and you played games, and it was more like a social thing. At that point, although you did learn, you did do arts and stuff, but then you went off to grade one. Schools in Australia, for the most part, there's a few that have changed, but most of them still follow the same. We have a school uniform, so everybody wore the exact same clothes, the exact same black leather shoes. And except on sports day, when on sports day, then you could wear, sneakers, tennis shoes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there was also then, a sports uniform as per se. So school was, you went to school in the morning around about 8:30, 9 o'clock. The school day finished at 3 o'clock. For the most part, we all, being in a small town, we all either walked to school or rode our bikes. At a very early age, I was in, I think, year two, and I was riding my bike to school with my older siblings. They had buses bringing some kids in, but that was mainly for a lot of the kids that lived down the road, down the track, who were on the farms. So obviously they couldn't come to school with their parents because their parents were working on the farms. So they would have buses, but if 3 or 4 buses pulled up, that was a lot. The rest, most people were in town or, rode their bikes. So that was primary school. And then you went to high school, which was 8 to 12. And they were 2 separate schools. So, the primary school where I lived was in one part of town, and the high school was in a different part of town. Going to school, we had our bags, our books in our bags and stuff like that. But whereas American schools all have lockers, and if Australia, we outside the classroom, you would have what we would call a port rack. And the port is our word for a bag, because it comes from like porter. So the porter carries your bag. So we have a port. So we would have port racks, and you would just leave your ports outside the classroom. They weren't locked. They were open racks that you basically just threw bags in, and nobody stole. Nobody.
Big trust system.
It was a trust system. And then between classes, if you needed to quickly run to your bag to grab the next book, then you would grab the book and go into your next class. And then you go through to high school. And high school, when I went through, they had a couple of systems with high school. When you got to year 10, the presumption is that not everybody was going to go on to university. So they had a couple of options that you could take. From year 10, you could either leave school at year 10 if you wanted to and go work on the farm, or go try doing a trade or something like that, or do what you wanted to do from that aspect. Or you could go on to year 11. And with year 11, they split, and they had an 11 EL, which was education for living, which meant you didn't want to leave school yet because you wanted to learn a few more things. So they would have classes which would teach you about, how to live by yourself and stuff like that. And that was all of what it was about. So it was 1 year of, banking and how to get a job and stuff like that.
Oh, like actual stuff you need to know, like real things.
Yes. Or if you went the other track, then you went to regular grade 11, and then you went to year 12. And then from year 12, at that point, you're presuming you're either going to go on to a university to study, or you're going to leave school anyway and go to a trade. Mm-hmm. And that's where that kind of branched out. We have the university system, which is the normal 3-4 year university system. And we have what's called a TAFE, T-A-F-E, Technical and Further Education. And that's where if you were doing a boilermaker or a plumber or some sort of trade,
right,
you would go off to TAFE and you would do because it was a trade school, and you would do 1 or 2 years at the trade school and then you would go out. The other option is you would go off to university and do your regular diploma or associate diploma or degree at a university. But we never, and at that thing, that earlier, when we get to university, the first year you were there, you started doing your degree. You didn't do another year of general studies.
You got to figure it out. Taking kinesiology 1000 as a business major. Taking gym. Why am I taking gym again?
Exactly. So, yeah, so that's where that kind of thing kind of, so that it's changed over the years. You know, we've introduced middle schools into our school system in Australia now. But we still have, you know, that kind of a structure going on. You know, like I have nephews and nieces. Some went on and did to university. Other ones took a gap year because gap year is big in Australia, as with most Eastern and European countries, I think. So I had a couple of nephews and nieces who did a gap year. Some decided not to go back. Others decide to open their own business and have their own business. So, yeah. So we still, university is there for those who want to do it, but it's not seen as, oh my God, you've got to go to university, otherwise you'll never do anything done with your life.
Right. So, exactly. Yeah. Which is A, kind of nice, and B, it sounds like that for the people who are like, you know, they don't choose to go to university, but they're trying to start a business. Sounds like they're prepared, though. Sounds like, hey, not only were they given options to figure out if they wanted to do this, when they chose that option, it was like, okay, here's actually everything you're going to need to know pertaining to this, and cut out all the extra excess stuff.
Yeah. And it's not perfect for everybody, but it seems to, you know, it does well because, as I said, you know, especially if you know you want to do a trade or something like that, you don't have to go to university to do the trade stuff. Or any other sort of business like that. It's like, why go to university if you don't want to, you know, become that sort of a career person.
Right. And I have a question from that. So let's say, because this sounds, to be honest with you, it sounds awesome. It sounds like you're giving kids a lot of the options that, like, you don't have that option here in the States. I'm just going to say that. So that's kind of nice to hear. But let's say you go down that TAFE route, right? Or let's say you want to go there. Do like the university, like you went to James Cook. Do those kind of schools require you to take like the EL or the other route? Or could you go to like TAFE and then be like, hey, I want to apply to like a James Cook or Sunshine Coast. Do you have to go back and maybe finish? And like, is that kind of like something like people do? Or could you like be like, hey, I went to TAFE. Here's my credentials. Here's what I learned. And then try to get in that way.
Yeah, no, you don't have to go back. So an example, you know, when I was doing my degree at James Cook, there were people who came onto campus and studied who had been in the workforce and were coming back to further their to get a degree or a diploma or something like that. So you don't have to go back and complete your high school certificate or what, you know, the equivalent right, here in the US or thing, to do that. So you don't have to have graduated year 12. If you've been in the workforce and you say, well, look, you know, I want to do this, then you apply to the university based on other merits, and they call them mature age students coming back into the university system. So you can come back and not have graduated high school. You basically have to come back on other merits. As right, you know, it's not like you can just say, I'm turning up, here I am. Although I have to give a credit, you know, one of the degrees I was doing, there were people there that were in it that were in their 60s at the time, and they were coming back because, you know, their grandchildren were at uni or or there was, you know, computers were just coming out and they wanted to come in and learn. So yeah. They were coming in at 60 years of age. Yeah. And computing. So
yeah.
God bless them.
Yeah, right. Exactly. No. And a couple questions with that. And that's cool to hear. When you were at James Cook, is it like the same thing as like universities at, you know, in the States, or, you know, do people, one question I do have is, you know, one, do people, you know, do you have to take entrance exams, or, you know, do you have to have a certain GPA, and, you know, is it, you know, 4-year degree? So you kind of briefly mentioned you guys kind of jump right in, you know, to what you guys are learning. Is it 2 years? Is it 4 years? And then with that, you know, I know like you guys, obviously like Australia has sports. Do people get, you know, scholarships, you know, for academic, for athletics to, you know, schools like that? Can people get scholarships for, I mean, academic scholarships I'm sure exist, but like, you know, do other things like that exist with universities in Australia as well?
So that's, I guess, the university system is it's similar but different. So for example, we have, when you go to uni, you know, you can do either a 2-year diploma or associate diploma, or a 3-year degree. And then 4 years if you want to go on to do your doctorate, your PhD, master's, all that sort of thing. So they're all kind of adjuncts onto that, you know, add time on at infinitum. So for example, like, okay, when I went to university, I was going I was doing a 3-year degree in Bachelor of Science. So the first year, you know, you're starting off and you're doing, you know, math, advanced math, chemistry, biochemistry, physics, those sort of classes. That was a 3-year program. You know, after doing, attempting to do that for a couple of years, I was like, this is not for me. I don't like the chemistry. I don't like the physics. Yeah, I'm going to have to change. So I changed midstream and switched over to computer studies. But it's when you're going there, it's the terms are different because we're not doing general studies up front. So the academic terms are different in that aspect of it. The living, so I lived on campus because where I was going to university was a 4 hours away from where I grew up. So I lived on campus in a non-denominational college. So our residences are actually called colleges. So, for example, the Catholic residence was called St. Paul's College. So we have the names of the denominational residences are colleges, and they're normally named as such in that way. But so we don't have frat houses. We don't have Alpha community, the Greek community, because we don't have that sort of a lifestyle on campus. But we do have, you know, the different residences for those who are staying on site on the grounds, and the sports that are played between the different colleges on campus. As I said, this is from my aspect of growing up in the university I went to, and it is slightly different depending on, like, if you went to some of the bigger universities in Sydney and Melbourne, stuff like that. But we didn't have the, like here where you have the, you know, the college football and the college basketball and all the other sports. We had sports, but they were more social in that aspect of it. Yeah, and yes, we did, you know, get together and, you know, you would watch the games like that, but they were not the extent that they are here where, you know, it's televised and shown and people bet on and stuff like that. So that aspect was very different, you know, with the social aspect and the sporting aspect of it. We don't really have, you know, that sort of thing going on. Well, not when I was going through that. So that may have changed, you know, in the last 10, 15 years, but definitely not in the 80s when I went through, so.
Okay. And I'm glad you went into that. And the other question, I guess, it may seem insignificant. Did you guys have like a mess hall or like a dining hall on campus as well?
So yeah, so each college had a dining hall.
Yeah.
And it was just included. So when you when you paid your tuition to stay on. So you, there was two tuitions. One was the college, the university tuition to go to school, and then the other one was to living on in residence at a particular place. So you, when you apply to the university to go to there, so there's two parts of it. So there's the applying to the university, and then there's also applying to where you want to stay if you want to stay on campus. So yeah, the first 3 years I stayed on campus, and then my final year I moved off campus with some friends into a rental property. But the when you apply to the residence, you basically had your meals in, so you had your accommodation, and then next door was a rec room and TV rooms and the dining hall, sort of stuff like that. So you would go down there for your meals, to the common room.
So that aspect sounds pretty similar. That aspect sounds pretty similar.
But our residents were single occupancy, so that was the everybody has their own room. Nobody shared rooms with anybody else.
That's kind of nice. It's nice because like you have your own room, but you're still with other people, so like you can still be social. So
yes,
yeah, that's kind of like the ideal situation. Wow, yes. It sounds like the first half of this interview I've heard. It's like Australia just thought of things and was like, let's just make it a little bit better. That's just what the vibe I'm getting right now. But when did you, and kind of pivoting here, you got your degree, you were ready to go. Was it immediately as soon as you were done graduating, you were coming to the States, or did you know, like, when did you come across coming, to the United States, and when did that part of your life, journey start?
Okay. So that was a pure fluke.
Here we are today.
Because when I was going through school, my parents were like, "Well, what do you want to do when you finish high school?" And so I said, "Well, I would like to go work in the local sugar mill as a chemist." And so originally, I wasn't even going to go to university to study. And so my parents got me to talk to the local chemist at the sugar mill, and they were like, "No, you really probably want to go to university first, get your degree, and then come back to work for us. Because if you come work for us, then you're doing it part time. And so instead of being a 3-year degree, you're doing a part time, so it becomes 6." So off I went to university, did the university shtick, after 2 years, I kind of was like, "Yeah, chemistry is not my stick." And so I switched over to accounting and computing, because at that time you couldn't do computing without doing accounting.
Sure.
And so I was doing that, and in my final year of doing the computing course, we had, the US has, where you have recruiters from companies coming on to campus,
right,
and saying, "Hey, look, come work for us afterwards."
Right.
One of the groups that came to talk through was the government, who came to the campus, and they was the group that came through that I was talking to was from the Australian Bureau of Statistics, which is the ABS.
Oh, yeah.
And they kind of said, "We'd love you to come work for us afterwards. If you're interested, send us, once you graduate, send us your letter, and we'll, consider you highly." So sure enough, that's what I ended up doing. I applied, and much to the displeasure of my parents, were like, "You can't just apply to one job, Scott. You really need,
I'm putting all my eggs in this basket."
Well, as it would be, I got the job, and the job landed me in Canberra, working for the government, federal government. So I worked for them for 5 years.
Okay.
And while I was there, some friends, one of my friends was a consultant for the government at that time. And she said, "Look, I've just applied for this job in the US. It's all expenses paid, 3 months. We should all go." So we all thought, "Oh, that's a pretty good idea. Let's do it.
Yeah.
So we all applied, and five of us ended up coming to the US for 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And on the way over, we stopped in Hawaii. We partied up in Hawaii on the way through, and then we got to the US. And our first jaunt in the US turned out it was in Louisiana, which we thought, Louisiana's great. New Orleans, we come.
From Hawaii to Louisiana, you guys are just hitting great spots. You guys are hitting great spots.
Although where we landed in Louisiana was not New Orleans, it was in a place called Shreveport. Mm-hmm. And Shreveport is located up in the Texarkana region. Up, you know, if you're looking at Louisiana, it's letter L. In mm-hmm. the top left corner is a place called Shreveport. Okay. It's about 3 hours due east of Dallas.
Okay.
And that's where we landed, and yeah, many stories there. But yeah, so we were there for originally 3 months, and they wanted to extend us. So they ended up extending us for 18 months. And that's where we kind of started, was in Louisiana.
Wait, so let me just, you went from a 3 months all expenses, and then they signed you on for an additional 18?
Yeah, well, because what it was
<That's> awesome.
the assignment they brought us to was actually quite a large one. I was working for an oil and gas company called Arkla Gas, ARKLA, Arkansas, Louisiana Gas Company. Mm-hmm. They were headquartered in Shreveport, and they had a very old computer system. And so they had hired all these companies from around the US to bring in a large swath of people to basically redo their whole system from payroll, finances, mm-hmm. everything, consumer facing, all of it to be computerized. So there was about, I would say, an easy, at the height, probably 200 contractors working on the job. And they had people, you know, we had people from Louisiana itself. We had people from California, from New York, from all over the US. We had South Africans, Australians, New Zealanders, you name a country, and there was representation of those people in Louisiana, because it was such a large job. Bring all these people in with all this expertise to rewrite the software.
That's really cool. So when you're doing this and they extend you for 18 months from I feel like we could have our own show about this, from a strictly like 30,000 foot view, how does that all work with like a work visa? Or like, did you have to have a work visa? Or like, I imagine having all that is like, you're always doing paperwork or something like that. And it's like six times more inconvenient than just the average person. Like, I don't think people understand. Like, high level view, what was that like?
So the high level view is, you know, you obviously, depending on obviously the each group of individuals there was, and the companies that brought them there. So the company that transferred us over there from their headquarters in Australia brought us in on, we came in on business visas, because we were still reporting and still charging to the Australian company. I think so. We came in as business visas. You had other people there who were there on, you know, who were citizens, obviously, and you had other people coming in on green cards who had been in the US, working in the US for other international companies at that time. So I started out with the business, and once I realized I was going to be staying there longer, I applied for a green card. So I end up going through all the, you know, the steps in order to apply for a green card. And at that time, it took quite a few years to, because I had to apply for the job as though I was there and against other applicants. And they had to advertise. So they advertised the job in a number of national papers. Mm-hmm. And so not only was I applying, so I was applying as part of a pool. So they said, okay, you know, we'd like Scott to be here, but we recognize we need, you know, Americans and other people who are living here that same opportunity. So they would apply, and they would basically open up the job for jobs for multiple people. And then they would hire 4 or 5 people, 2 or 3 Americans, and they would also hire, you know, 1 or 2 Australians or British or whatever, UK or whatever, for that job there. And that way it satisfies the criteria that, you know, they're not just giving it to a foreign, a national, they're giving it to the local people as well, to local citizens as well.
Right.
So I went through all that stuff there. You know, and so that the green card application took a few years to go through. I think it took like 2 or 3 years for it to finally go through. And so that's when I moved on to being on a green card. Mm-hmm. Which, P.S., it's not a green card, it's a pink card.
Which I think is even more funny, because, like, I'm sure there's a story of why it started. I mean, maybe it started off green, but, like, I'd love to hear that and
why it's still called that. And continuing on with that, and again, because I feel like, Scott, we should do like an episode, like three episodes with you, because we could keep diving into all these. But keeping on that 30,000 foot level and keeping on the same subject, when did you, for those who don't know, like, again, you're a U.S. citizen now, correct, as well, correct? Yes. And you have dual citizenship in Australia. Yeah. What was that process a little bit like? And, you know, when did you realize maybe you wanted to get your U.S. citizenship?
So the green card I kept for the 10 years on the green card. So I kind of looked at it and said, you know, there's a possibility, you know, that my life would be remaining here in the US forever today. Because every time you apply, so the green card, you have to reapply every 10 years and you have to be fingerprinted and go through that whole spiel. But my life basically at this point is, you know, that I'm very much here. And so I kind of was like, nah. And so I went back and forth a few times, and the thing that helped me up on it was that at one point Australia did not recognize, you know, they said, you know, once you become one of one, you lose your citizenship if you go to another citizenship. Other countries used to do that. But then Australia changed their mind and said, no, you won't lose it. They would recognize dual. So that when it made it became a bit easier for me to make that decision.
Absolutely.
Dual. So yeah.
That's a tough, yeah, I would definitely have to think about that for sure. It's like, wait, okay, what do I, like, that's, yeah, I, yeah, that's not really necessarily fair either, so I'm glad they switched that.
Yeah.
That's good. Okay, so, and again, we're definitely going to have you back on, because I feel like we could talk hours just about that whole process and everything. So, as people are listening to me, Scott, as I mentioned, Scott is a friend. I've known Scott since I was, a wee lad. How did you cross paths with my dad? You mentioned computers and account. How did you cross paths with, you know, the company my dad was working for?
Yeah. So
we're actually really, I don't think I really know the story, honestly, too. So this is good for me to listen to as well.
It's pretty easy. It harkens to a comment your dad made. And when he was talking to you about it, is that, you know, you always talk to people because you don't know where those people, you know, the history of those people and what those people are and what they will be in your future. So you should never not talk to people that you don't know.
Right.
So what happened was I eventually wound up in New York with the job working at in Midtown Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And when I was there on assignment, I was in a project team which did quite a lot of like back office type projects, and I was put on a project which was once again rewriting a major piece of software for the company, and I was put on the same team as your dad.
Sorry, that makes me laugh to think about.
And so we'd have a few meetings and stuff, and it was around about Christmas, and your dad being your dad, because we went home to your mum and said, there's this guy in Australia that I work with, and he's doesn't have any family here in the States, and you know, would it be okay to bring him home, I guess? And that's kind of the dialogue your dad had with your mum. Turns out that I got to come out to your place out in Bethpage in Bohemia. Went from there, and with work and everything, all of a sudden we started traveling to travel to all the regional offices. So I started doing a lot more traveling with your dad to all these offices. Now, he is an employee and myself as a consultant, and then all of a sudden I was going out to your place and in the summer, and all the Christmas, and so that was. So you guys became my go-to Christmas family, much like I have, you know, an Easter family and a Thanksgiving family.
Right, exactly.
So that's kind of how I started coming out to your house.
Yeah.
And it went from there. You know, so I was there when you guys were in cribs and nappies. And
I was going to say, when you first came to Bohemia, was I around yet? Because by that time I may not have been A, and B, like, that's, I think I was one, and then my parents moved down to Virginia. So
I was there with Anthony, when Anthony was born. No, I wasn't there, as in there, but I remember going out to the
mom, my dad, Scott. I wouldn't be surprised, honestly. I would not be surprised.
So I was out there early on, and yeah, I said, because I remember all the growing up with you guys, growing up with Anthony. So that's kind of when I came into the scene, was around about the Anthony timeline. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, obviously then, yeah, when you turned up the Christmas and all that was out there was, yeah, before you. So, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and that's, again, I think that's like the first time I've heard that story. I always thought you were like, again, because for the longest time, I never knew what my dad did. So, and at the same time, by that logic, I never knew what you did. So by asking my dad and my mom, like, hey, how does, you know, dad know Scott? There was just no way I was going to comprehend that. You know, how you guys actually met, and hearing that now, it makes a lot of sense. So that was cool to hear. And, you know, I segueing into that, because again, I'm gonna have to do the Scott saga. The next, like, pivoting into that, is that still kind of like what you do, like that consulting role, or have you moved on to other ventures? I know you rent out, you know, houses and, you know, our area and all over the country, and then, you know, you have the bakery, but, you know, I'm not going to spoil too much, but, you know, what else? Do you still do that consulting, or do you just, have you moved on to other stuff?
you could say I've moved on. I worked the major consulting stuff I worked through till 2 years ago. The vendor that I was doing a lot of work for, did a lot of reorging, and so I didn't go back to them. So I remained working at the bakery, and I have some friends who have some business, but that's their businesses, renting dumpsters and the like. So I do a little bit of odd job work for them, and I work normally when I'm not busy with the bakery, one day a week at the bakery, where I do all the web development, and I do the books and payroll and all sort of back office work and bills and stuff. But that's normally like a 4 or 5 hour gig once a week. At the moment, we're doing a POS, so I'm, you know, doing a bit of POS work. But but other than that, no, I've decided that I no longer need to worry about working full time for any gig. So
the dream.
I'm like your dad. I'm semi. No, I'm not like your dad. Your dad's retired. I'm semi.
My dad's definitely retired.
I look forward to the day that I could be like your dad and say I'm done. I quit. I now. Although that'll probably never happen, because I always, my whole big goal that I always wanted to head towards was at some point. When I finished doing my main career, I wanted to be able to go to these mum and pop businesses around town, or go to a local charitable organization, say, look, you know, I'll just donate my services to you, or for Amiga, you know, it's income, just, you know, throw me a few bucks, whatever, and I'll do your banking, your computer systems or whatever. So it's something where it's the case of I do it because I wanted to do it. Well, no, I've always wanted to do it. But just in the case of just something to keep me busy, sort of a thing.
I understand that, because I think about, you know, I don't know what this will turn into, but I could easily, like, you know, it definitely, just because this is a simple concept of talking to people, I would love to do this eventually, like, you know, 30, 40 down years. Well, I hope I'm retired in 30, 40 years, but
this is something that's, you know, easy to do. And like, by the time I'm that age, having the connections I have, I'm sure will be more, you know, branched out. It would, you know, it's like you said, I definitely would want to, you know, I feel like continue to do something, but as long as it's on my time, it's on my accord. So with that, I guess, moving on to the next one, and we've definitely talked about a bunch, and I think the one about high school definitely takes, you know, the cake. You know, what are, especially since you have, you know, citizenships in both, what are, you know, what are some of the things about, you know, give me two things you like about Australia more than the United States, if you can, and then two things about the United States you may like a little bit more than Australia, just to be fair.
Yep. Well, I guess the one thing which comes to mind is the laid back attitude, laid back lifestyle of Australia. So Australia is very much a chillax. And, you know, don't get me wrong, it is, you know, when you work and stuff like that, it's business as usual thing. But but you know, life always comes first, and I've always, you know, through my whole career, you know, I always say, I work to live, I don't live to work. You know, because the day I drop dead, you know, they're going to have another person sitting in my chair doing my job. So I've always, you know, a piece of that. So that's, I think, and that's endemic to how we were brought up as well. You know, always enjoy your job, always bring the right attitude to the work. And I look at, you know, my nephews and nieces, and they're also very, you know, they love their jobs, and you know, they love what they do. But they're always wanting to enjoy themselves. Like when, you know, they had my nieces had gap years between going from school to high school, from going from school to university, or into their careers. We're all about, you know, on the weekends going and you know, hanging out, having barbecues, or going to the beach, or or doing something. So that aspect of it is, that's the key difference, I think, between the Australia and US is we like having a good time, and we like making fun of ourselves. we're very much what's called an ochrism, ochers, where we make fun of yourself, because if you can't make fun of yourself,
right,
then, you know, so that's, I guess that's two things. One is we're definitely, it's all about the attitude, I think, of Australia, is that, you know, we're seen as the lucky country, you know, because we have, you know, great beaches, great lifestyle. So that's, I guess, two aspects of it is the lifestyle and you know, the ability to make fun of yourself and not take everything so seriously. So that's from Australia point of view.
No walking furries.
No walking furries, exactly. Yes, that one's it. Or you know, having the piss take out of you because I say the letter H. being able to laugh at yourself is a good thing to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that being said, so you know, things about the US. One thing I've always thought is amazing, and I've respected it is the Americans' pride in their country. No matter where you go, American flags fly everywhere. If you were to go to Australia, you'd see the odd occasional Australian flag flying around the place, but in the US, everybody is an American, and they love telling people that they're American. And sometimes, except when they're in the UK, when they're traveling overseas, but
yeah, no, some places they're like, oh no,
British,
I'm Italian.
But you know, when you hear that the pride, and you know, and you go to the sporting events, and you know, it's definitely regardless, you know, whether they're at home or whether it's a sporting event or where they are, Americans love, you know, saying they're American. That's a big thing that I think is amazing about America. And the other thing is the which is great about America is getting around. you know, with the highway, the planes and the transportation, you know, to get anywhere, you've got the freeways, you know, where it's multi-lane highways and or getting from one city to another, it's a quick flight. I go back to Australia and I'm traveling on, except around the capital cities, I'm traveling on one lane highways. and, you know, to get from my sister's place to where my dad used to live is about an 8-hour flight because I've got to take two planes and so yeah, so there's different things about America. You know, it's easy. It's definitely because it is a bigger country. I mean, Australia's population still is only like about 26 million people now. So, you know, with different vastness of numbers, obviously then you get a lot more things. You know, call centers when you're calling in for a phone line. At least with the US, you can get a bit of thing. You do a phone call to a company in Australia. Yeah, you're on the phone for a couple of hours.
Hey, sometimes that happens here. Sometimes I was
on. Sometimes it happens here, but yes.
Yeah, but it's you like okay. And I know I had some other questions, and I know we're coming up on time. I want to scrap them because another cool fact I love telling people, and I think other people should learn is. You are by far the biggest world traveler. I know. For those who don't and confirm this stuff from you've been to all seven continents, correct?
Correct, yes.
That's crazy to think about. So in the last couple of minutes before we wrap up, I would love to hear maybe your top three favorite places you've ever been. I know that's really hard, but you know, give me some of your, and it's okay if you have others, but maybe your top three.
Yeah.
And then maybe a crazy traveling story that you maybe would like, you know, people would scratch their heads.
Top three. That's the tough part of that question is that, yeah, there's different places have different reasons for why I go there. Going to Antarctica, that was my lifelong, you know, one I've always wanted to go to, and thankfully I had some other friends who were wanting to do a similar trip, and so we did a trip to Antarctica, and that, you know, by boat from Argentina, across the passage into Antarctica, so that was amazing. That was well and truly up there with the top three. I'm going to kind of do it by continent. So Africa, I mean, I've done South, Central, and Northern Africa. And to me, you know, I've some of the nicest people I've met are in some of the most rural places of Africa. Africa was phenomenal unto itself. I've been there a few times. And Asia, I've done, you know, China, Vietnam, Japan, Indonesia. So quite a few of the continents countries within Asia. And once again, the nice people, and I guess that brings into the funny stories, and this happened early on in some of my travels. I went to Thailand with a couple of friends, and it was friends similar to a meeting with your dad. You know, I was in a meeting one time at work with some friends, and one of them said, you know, and I'd only known them for a short period of time, said, oh yeah, my husband and I are going on a trip to Thailand. And I was like, oh, sounds really good. So she said, why don't you come? And so she went home and she said, I think I just invited somebody from work to come to Thailand with us.
He's going well.
So out of the blue, shortly thereafter, I was in Thailand with two people, which I had only kind of recently just met at work. And,
right, exactly.
And the trip to Thailand involved tracking through the jungles of northern Thailand, on a 3-day track. So it was myself, the friend, the colleague of mine at the time, and her husband and our tour guide. And for 3 days, we trekked through the jungles and we slept in villages and ate the local food.
No.
And as I said, some of the most amazing experiences and the most amazing people I've met. We're in these little villages in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. So, yeah. That's awesome.
So yeah.
And Scott, I want to ask like a billion more questions. And honestly, you're gonna have to come back on. And that's the best part about like we said, the best part about this is I plan on keep doing this. We could have a million Scott episodes and we could talk for hours, and I think we definitely should. But before we wrap up, is there anything else you wanted to share or anything you wanted to shed some light on? Anyone you think I should interview next?
Oof.
Yeah.
Yeah. On the top of my head, I could think of a few people, but then I tried the names under the bus. They'd be like, what'd you call me for? You got me there. No,
it's all good. Okay. Well, like I said, we'll definitely have you back on. And Scott, I can't thank you enough for joining me. You always are welcome on the show. If you wanted your own segment, you could have it. It's yours. It's 100%. To go into business with you, Scott, would just, for me, it would be the smartest thing I've ever done. In 30 years, I'd be like, well, one day Scott told me, and it would just be a wrap. But anyways, I want to thank you again for joining me. I think everyone's going to enjoy the episode. And again, thank you so much for your time.
I appreciate it. Thank you much for the honor of interviewing me. I very much appreciate it.
Of course. Again, we'll have you on for sure. But thanks everyone for listening. Tune in again next week for another guest. And with that, we'll jump into the outro song. Later, everybody.
Cheers. Thanks a lot.